powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We've got Mike Olick Jr. coming on the show tomorrow, guys, and I only wish that he was coming on the show today. And only at this point am I regretting it, because he would be such a great addition for Hype Train, which we are going to be playing later today. Think of Mike Olick Jr. as like a part of the Hype Train segment that we do. I feel like he'd have some hot takes.
Okay, all right. He probably would. Now, the thing is should we make Hype Train a guest segment?
Well, like, that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking we do, you know, Hype Train as like a call, like people can join. We get a third person at the station where like we can have a caller call in. We can have a guest come on, because the entire idea is this take hype? Like, Packers are going to win the Super Bowl. Is this hype? Or are you like, absolutely, that's going to happen? It's like a hot take express. It's like your opportunity to be like, no, I'm not buying that. And here's why. Here's who's making the Super Bowl. Who doesn't love those conversations?
Is Hype Take going to turn into something, or Hype Train going to turn into something where, just celebrities flock to this segment, where they just, I've got to be a part of Hype
Train. I'm
going
to get so many requests. I'm going to be like, you guys, I keep getting calls. Kim Kardashian apparently wants
well,
to
now
join
that
us
you're
for
a
Hype
blue,
Train tomorrow.
Now that you're a blue check mark, you have all those connections.
That's exactly right. What was our slogan for you, Curtis, in this year?
The check turns blue in 2022.
That's exactly right. That's what we're going to be working on this year. That's the plan. well, one person who could join Hype Train, we'll have to get him on, is Daniel Jeremiah, friend of the show, Daniel Jeremiah. He's got a lot of hot takes. I mean, mostly he's got a lot of reports, right? That's really kind of his bread and butter, is he's going to get stuff about college football and stuff about the NFL, lots of drafting stuff, and we'll have to get him on as we inch closer to the draft. I think
I promise you, here's what I promise. Okay. I promise you we'll get him on next week. How's that?
I would love that. Now, okay. Will he be on for Hype Train, or will he be on to, like, tell us?
No, we won't bring him on for Hype Train. I want to get information out of DJ.
I feel like that could have some low-key information, but that's just me. All right, well, we will have Hype Train with the three of us today, just like we do every single Wednesday. It's one of my all-time favorite things that we do, that's coming up at 1:30. If you haven't heard it before, I promise you're going to love it. It's like a really, really fun segment for predictions and hot takes. So, again, that's coming up later today. Speaking of Daniel Jeremiah, he had a tweet. I saw Mike Salk retweet it. It's how I stumbled across this. And he was looking at potential trades for Russell Wilson. I don't think Russell Wilson's going anywhere. I think the Ian Rappaport thing that came out the other day, Jake, you were the first to say it, is like, look, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying this report. But the reason that I'm mentioning it is because these trade rumors and conversations are going to continue all offseason long. And I feel like sometimes the best way to approach it is either to make fun of them or to explain why you would or wouldn't do something, right? To like actually look at like how legit would this actually be, this offer. So Daniel Jeremiah points to the three first-round picks that Philadelphia has this year, which is wild. He says Eagles will get Russell Wilson. Seahawks get Eagles' three first-round picks this year and next year's second-round pick. Which team says no? My answer, Seattle. I think Seattle says no to that trade. Mike Salk, he's the one who retweeted it, and he said, I agree with his point on this one. He says, look, the Eagles have some mid-level picks, starting with 15 as their highest. Could that land you a premier pass rusher, like something that you actually need? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, TJ Watt, number 30th overall, I think. But overall, like some of the best guys in the league, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, who he was for Houston, like all of those picks are going to be like 1 through 5. So if you're not going to get those picks, then no, I don't want them. You could use those three first-round picks to move up, but like, I don't love this trade. I don't actually think it's a knockout of the park.
Yeah, it is. It isn't a total knockout of the park, and obviously that's good draft positioning. I don't want to look at that and say no, that's not good draft positioning
at all. Oh, I'm looking
at
three first-round picks, just spitting in the face of three.
Micah Parsons was picked number 12. Rashawn Slater, who has been an instant, really good player, was 13.
Nick Bosa was two. Like I feel like the higher, the more of a guarantee there is.
Well,
I'm not messing around.
I would totally agree with that. I mean, Kwity Paye, who's who's been fantastic with Indy. I mean, he was picked at 21. But it's not, you're right. It doesn't become as sure of a thing when you get into the middle rounds. I mean, there's still an unbelievable amount of talent. But, you know, the thing is that's so hard about, you know, moving on from Russell Wilson is that when you're looking at how do you replace and replenish and how you move forward, to me, the only way that you can do that is in the view of a teardown. You have to be committed to tearing this thing down and restocking up over the next 3 years, trying to convince yourself that you can win games and be extremely competitive from day one, moving on from Russell Wilson, I think is just insanity. So if you're willing to go down that road, restock, rebuild, move forward, then I think that is where, okay, if you want to go down that road and you're committed to that line of thinking, then that's where I can even start to have that conversation. And those trades, Stacey, then look like, okay, that's enticing about the Eagles. What about, you know, for example, you know, as well, when you look at these other teams, what's another quarterback needy team that we know right now that's just super desperate for a quarterback?
A lot. New Orleans, desperate for a quarterback.
Right.
Steelers, desperate for a quarterback. Well, not desperate, but they need a new quarterback. The Giants, if they move on from, said Daniel Jeremiah, from Danny Dimes.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants, they have a lot of unique capital. They have some, if I'm not mistaken, they have two high first round picks.
I think 5 and 7. This,
yeah, so I mean, that to me, now we're talking. Now we're talking in terms of that kind of capital that is beneficial for the team. The other one that you could look at in terms of just an overall volume of picks that they have is the Denver Broncos as well. The Broncos, they have a ton of picks littered throughout, you know, the first, second, third round. So you could give up three firsts and then add a bunch of second and thirds to that, which then, you know, bolster up the overall capital that you have, which gives you the flexibility to trade up, move back, and really give a lot of flexibility to the organization to then move forward. But Stacey, to you know, as we go through all of this, my ultimate belief is the reason why Daniel Jeremiah or you would ask the question, and your immediate response would be no from the Seattle Seahawks, is because no. Why on earth would you give
it's
up
because, no.
a quarterback of Russell Wilson's caliber? Why on earth would you ever want to do it?
Now, I wouldn't want to do it.
For all those other people that don't want to do it, guess what? And our staunch Pete supporters and everything else.
Neither does
well,
Pete.
Pete doesn't want to do it either. And there's a clear reason why. Stacey, let me read this stat to you. This is an insane stat. Okay, that I came across last night. Dr. Jason Johnson, okay? Always enjoy seeing him get involved in the conversation here. But he said that Russell Wilson, despite missing three games by injury and taking another three to get back to form, had more touchdowns, 25, than seven of the quarterbacks in the playoffs currently. Kyler Murray, 24, Derek Carr, 23, Big Ben, 22, Mac Jones, 22, Tannehill, 21, Garoppolo, 20, Hurts, 16. Okay, so even in Russell's bad year, and we know the low lights of the season that he has had, still pretty darn good.
I know.
And the upside is still significantly better than what a lot of these other playoff teams are walking into with.
Another stat, Jake. How about 1951? Now, that doesn't sound like a stat at all. It sounds like a year, because it is a year. It's the year that Pete Carroll was born. He's turning 71 this year. He doesn't want to rebuild. He doesn't want to start all over again. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He's trying to get to a Super Bowl, win another ring. That's exactly why everyone is doing this. And if you're closer to doing that in 2 years, if you hang on to your quarterback and hang on to your head coach and hang on to some of these big pieces, why would you not do that? Now, do I think that there are people that are so down on Russell Wilson, even locally, that they question whether or not the Seahawks could even get a first-round pick? Yes. Do I think those people are crazy? Yes. Because there are absolutely teams. You had, don't take my word for it. Brock Heward was on with us, and he said, you want to know the offseason conversations that are happening in New Orleans and offseason conversations happening most especially in Denver? How do you get Russell Wilson? How do you get Aaron Rodgers? How do you get one of these franchise quarterbacks who no matter how many years he has left on his deal, no matter his age, is significantly better than what you have now. And those teams, especially Denver, have a ton of talent around at quarterback. So even a quarterback that isn't the best quarterback in the league, because they're not trading for Patrick Mahomes, even a quarterback that isn't the best quarterback in the league is going to be good enough if he is like a franchise caliber star, because they've got so many weapons around him. That being said, Russell Wilson only has, what, 2 years left on his deal as well? So I think there's some people that, and this is a question I give more credence to. I don't agree with it, but this one I understand more than just saying, well, what if he's not worth a first-round pick? A team will give you a first. The argument I understand more and give a little more credit to is, well, what if Russell Wilson doesn't resign? What if he plays out the next 2 years? You could have traded him, gotten like a number five overall pick, gotten several first round picks.
Yeah.
And instead you just got two more years. Let's say you don't get to a Super Bowl. Let's say you barely get into the playoffs. Let's say it just doesn't work out for you. And then you have nothing.
True. And that's where, here's the thing though. I think that sentiment that is there around the, you know, the overall writers or media folks, I think it's all reaction to what they have witnessed over the offseason. And also, the thing that we don't know is, you know, how does John Schneider and Pete Carroll view this, right? We know Pete Carroll wants Russell Wilson to remain. You know, John Schneider, I think, has entertained more of those conversations more so than maybe Pete has. But still, that doesn't mean that John Schneider wants to move on from Russell Wilson even after the contract expires. So I believe that there is still a lot to be determined between now and then. If we're talking about 2 years down the road, I still would say that why on earth would you move on from this guy, you know, 2 years from now? And we'll wait and see. You know, 2 years from now, maybe Russell Wilson's play has seriously declined and it is very obvious. Or maybe this guy continues to play at an extremely high level and is arguably, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And you go, okay, yeah, maybe we misread that. Maybe we didn't look at that situation well enough, and now we're looking at a position where we're without a franchise quarterback, and we're just like every other team, you know, average to below average team that's in desperate search for a franchise guy, you know, perpetually year in and year out. So if you know as an organization, if John Schneider, I'm Pete Carroll, I know that I don't want to sign him back in 2 years, or that I have a inkling that Russell, like a strong inkling that Russell isn't going to be willing to, you know, have a long-term deal after these, you know, two seasons, then yeah, I would definitely be looking into trading him. Because Curtis, what is one of the things that you and I always,
or me,
you know,
too,
lament about? What do we always lament about with this team and missed opportunities with stars?
I mean, there's a lot we lament about. I mean, we've got draft picks galore that we've whiffed on.
When you had the opportunity to make, when you had the opportunity to make trades,
yes.
Right? I mean, Curtis Rogers, every time they don't capitalize.
You look at the whole Legion of Boom. You had plenty of opportunities to trade those guys away at various intervals and get some kind of draft pick in return, get something in return. And I believe the only member of that defense that they traded and got anything for was Michael Bennett, which was like a fifth round pick plus a wide receiver who I'm blanking on that didn't do anything with the Seahawks. You let Richard Sherman walk. You let Cam Chancellor retire. You let Earl Thomas walk. You didn't get anything in return for those guys. You didn't get anything in return for Cliff Averill. You didn't get anything in return for anybody on that defense. You could have traded those guys at the height of their value and restocked the cupboards here. You could have had first-round picks in years like 17, 18, 19 that could still be on your roster, and they didn't do that. Frank Clark was the only one they ever traded for and got anything back in return.
And I completely agree with you. At the time, though, you're thinking, but why would I trade these guys if I can win a Super Bowl with them? I'd rather have a Super Bowl than get a first-round pick
right.
from this guy.
Yeah, but you look at the Patriots, they've never been afraid to trade a star player for a first-round pick. Richard Seymour, that happened. Ty Law, you've got other guys on that defense that they were like, sayonara, Asante Samuel, he went to the Eagles. There was never anybody that they fell so much in love with that they were willing to sacrifice their future for. Even Tom Brady they let walk.
I completely agree. I just sometimes comparing any team to the Patriots feels like a lost cause because it is far and away like the statistical anomaly in the NFL. Bill Belichick is unlike any other head coach and has done things unlike any other head coach. And it's worked out for them because they've had Tom Brady, because they've kept winning. If the Patriots haven't won the Super Bowls they did, people would be looking at them saying, like, you're an idiot for trading some of these guys.
Yeah, I would agree. I would totally agree. That's why this conversation's all, you know, it's all just, it's not something that's actually based in fact. It is fun conversation to look through and say, hey, what would it take? What would you feel comfortable with? Because the reality is that Russell, what do we know Russell Wilson has always said? I want to finish my entire career here in Seattle. He plans on playing till he's 40-something, until the wheels fall off, okay? That's his plan. And as long as he can do it at a high level, right? So that's his plan. So he's not wanting to move in his mindset. He's not wanting to not be a Seahawk in after 2 years. And I believe that the organization wants to have Russell Wilson as their guy. So I don't view this as something that, you know, should happen, that it is, you know, imminent. That's not how I view it right now. And I think that this is something where we can have fun debating on whether or not they should do it, but overall, when you have a franchise quarterback, you do not move on from him, and you find ways to make it work, make the drama or the behind-the-scenes issues work, and try to put the best product on the field in order for that quarterback to, you know, hopefully get you to the Super Bowl and you're hoisting a Lombardi trophy.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played.
All right, Jake, we got all fired up during that segment, so got to be a really quick Four Down Territory here. We'll start with this one first down. With the new information we've learned about the Seahawks defensive coordinator search, what do you believe is going to happen?
Well, what I believe is going to happen is I'm getting more and more convinced that you're going to see a co-defensive coordinator situation here in Seattle, with the defensive line coach Clint Hurt taking over the run game coordinator responsibilities and Ed Donatell taking over as the passing game coordinator and really focusing on the secondary and pass coverage. This would be a good mesh in terms of these two guys coached on the same staff together with the Bears, with Vic Fangio. Clearly, Pete Carroll is very interested in that Vic Fangio tree. Now also being reported by Michael Sean Dugar that Sean Desai, the defensive coordinator for the Chicago Bears, has been interviewed or been requested to be interviewed by the Seattle Seahawks, who also coached under Vic Fangio. So there is a definite trend that is going on right now, and that's where I see the two, you know, the most likely scenario that I see is that you see two guys, Clint Hurt and Ed Donatell, that are going to co-DC the Seahawks defense.
Second down. All right, we talked about ways the Seahawks defense could improve, but what did they do so well defensively that you don't want to see them, or excuse me, that you do want to see them continue?
Well, what I want to see continue is the way that they utilize their personnel on third down. The Seahawks were one of the best teams in the NFL in third down situations, and they really started to lean into their personnel. They added more of a dime package. They put Ryan Neal on the field, took Jordan Brooks out, and that's where they really were able to find some sort of identity. There was a lack of identity in a lot of areas, Stacey, throughout the season. The one thing that really caught on around week 5 or 6, if my memory serves me correctly, is when they started implementing Ryan Neal consistently on third downs, and they got great results out of that. And to me, that's something I want to see them continue to do. I would love to see Ryan Neal come back and love to see Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Ryan Neal on the field at the same time together and maximize their third down capabilities and continue to get themselves off the field.
All right, third down. Speaking of third down, what stat did you see across the Twitter sphere last night?
Well, the stat that I saw, and we talked about it in our last segment, comes from Dr. Jason Johnson. Russell Wilson, despite missing 3 games by injury and taking another 3 to get back to form, had more touchdowns, 25, than 7 of the quarterbacks that were in the playoffs in the first round. Kyler Murray, 24. Derek Carr, 23. Big Ben, 22. Mac Jones, 22. Tannehill, 21. Garoppolo, 20. Jalen Hurts, 16. So what does that tell you? What it tells you is that Russell Wilson didn't it's very clear that he did not have his best season. Very clear that he had some lowlights, some serious lowlights. But what it also tells you is that this is a player that is capable of performing at an extremely high level. This is still one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and that one of his worst performances in his career was a lot of players' highs. And I think that that has to be taken into account as you move forward, knowing that the ceiling for this player in Russell Wilson, I mean, is extremely high to the point where you could look at him as arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. So when people talk about moving on or, you know, going in a different direction, don't forget that Russell Wilson's still a very, very great quarterback in this league.
All right, fourth down. Jake, we talked about the Seahawks defense being in attack mode in 2022. What type of player, or which player specifically, pick your poison, could they add in free agency or the draft to make that easier?
Well, there's a couple different thought processes here in terms of that specific question. The type of player that you need to be able to make yourself more aggressive. One, you need better pass rush. You need to be able to have guys that can fly off the edge, that can be in that attack mode, that really generate the pressure on the quarterback. That's why I think Chandler Jones would be a slam dunk for the Seattle Seahawks. And he would be a great addition to what they want to do going into 2022. Akeem Hicks is another name that I think really stands out to me. Someone that's very familiar with what direction that Pete Carroll, I think, wants to go in defensively. Has worked with Clint Hurt before in the past. I believe he would be in a tremendous addition to this defensive line. The other thing, Stacey, you talk about corner play. You talk about, you know, having somebody that could shut down one side of the field. Well, you had that with DJ Reed in terms of playing very, very good football. But if you could add another sure thing on the outside, I think that that would really, really help your group and give Pete Carroll more confidence in playing in that attack mindset, knowing that you're going to put your corners in one-on-one situations often, and do you have the guys that can hold up and can manage that situation and not get beat deep, not give up big plays on a consistent basis?
All right. As a reminder, coming up in about a half hour, we're going to talk to Shannon Dreyer about Baseball America's new list of the top 100 prospects. Very exciting landing spots for a few key Seahawks minor leaguers. We're also going to talk about that. We'll kind of tell you what some of those landing spots are at 11:45. Before we get to any of that, though, I had kind of a fun challenge for you guys. Now, a Houston Astros AAA affiliate is changing their name to something that I'm not going to say it's so funny, but like it's kind of funny enough that it was trending yesterday on Twitter. So I challenged us to find some names, some minor league team names that might be able to compete with that one. If you guys can think of any, some of your favorite minor league team names, I need to hear them right now, 206-421-3776. All of that coming your way next in the timeline.
This is the Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
All right, quickly for you guys, who were the top Seattle athletes of 2021? Help the Seattle Sports Commission choose the sports stars and stories of the year by voting for the 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. You can find more info about voting or about the May event itself at 710sports.com/events. Again, that was for the Seattle Sports Star of the Year Award, 87th Annual. That's always a good time. I love going to those. All right. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about Baseball America's top 100 prospects. Shannon Dreyer joining us at the top of the hour. Before we get to any of that, it is the Timeline. This hour brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Reading you the top stories from your own timeline. This one trending, by the way, the Houston Astros AAA affiliate. And I know you guys are thinking, why do we care about the Houston Astros? You will in about 2 seconds. They're going to change their name from the Sugarland Skeeters to the Sugarland Space Cowboys. A top
right
10.
On.
I think in a top yeah. 10 minor league My team name. God. I know it's
absolutely.
The Astros. I know we all decided we collectively hate the Astros. But guess what? That's a cool name. That is a
why?
Cool minor league name. It's the AAA affiliate.
Why do you feel like you needed to move on from Skeeters?
Because your alternative
That's a great
would
name.
Be the Space Cowboys.
Mosquitoes.
You're telling me the choice is, do you want Skeeters Skeeters.
Short for mosquitoes.
Or Space Cowboys. There's a very easy answer.
Both
it's like
work.
Astros themed. No, one works significantly better than the other one. What's terrible about it? This is like one of the best names in the minor league system by far. It's not even close.
Okay, Stacey, we know you're biased because you know it's near and dear towards your heart.
Yeah,
and,
exactly
and we know
right.
Brian is a space cowboy.
He's also a doctor.
Now I get it.
Yeah. I asked listeners to send in some of the best minor league team names that they've heard. There's the Rocket City Trash Pandas, a AA affiliate for the Angels.
It's like, I think that's what they call raccoons
yes,
there, isn't
trash
it?
Pandas. Yeah. Raccoons
trash
are cute.
Trash pandas.
You guys, I'm going to be really real with you. Raccoons are cute, and what I love most about them is they have, like, human hands. If you look at search, like, raccoon hands,
dude,
they have, like, opposable thumbs, I swear.
One
they
time,
look like humans.
One time I was working really early morning here. This was probably like 5 or 6 years ago. I got to work probably about 3 a.m. And a raccoon climbed down from a tree that was outside the building here. It saw me and got up on its hind legs and walked towards me. And I bolted towards the door. You are not coming any closer,
Absolutely
pal.
Not. He's knocking on the door to try to get
yeah,
in.
Yeah, heck no.
I also like that raccoons
wash
their
scrap
food
with
before
a raccoon.
They eat them. I think that I like respect it as a type A person. I can like really get behind that. I'm sorry, Jake. Did you just say you had a fight with a raccoon?
No, I said I'm not going to scrap with a raccoon.
Absolutely
I'm 100%
not.
With Curtis. A raccoon that gets up on its hind legs and is coming at you.
That's a threat.
Yeah, no,
that's a threat and a half.
That's a raccoon that's down for a fight.
I think most raccoons are down for fights. Like I would say 9 times out of 10, a raccoon is trying to fight you.
Couple
like,
other
fist to fist.
Good ones. The Montgomery biscuits. I mean, who doesn't love biscuits?
Everyone does. Whether they're, as the British would say, biscuits, meaning cookies, or whether they're actual biscuits here in America, meaning like delicious ready morsels.
Like Pillsbury grands.
Yeah.
How about the Binghamton Rumble Ponies?
Oh, I like that one. That's really cute. So I looked up the Birmingham Rumble Ponies, and it's like a horse. I think they should have made it more pony-shaped. There's also the Orlando Solar Bears. This is why it's cool. It's actually an NHL affiliate, and it is a polar bear with sunglasses on. Get it?
Nice.
And it reminds me of this fact that I learned one time that made me really sad, which is that polar bears are only in the Arctic, and penguins are only in the Antarctic. So they'll never actually meet each other.
That's probably for the best.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
polar bears can get kind of vicious, and penguins don't exactly move very quick.
I think they move really fast underwater.
In the water, yeah. But
that's amazing.
I guess.
What about here locally? What about here locally? The Tri-City Dust Devils.
Yeah.
There is a lot of dust out in the Tri-City.
Yeah, I like it more when an animal is involved.
Oh, yeah. We've had this debate. That Stacey's very firm on it needs to be an animal of some kind.
Well, yeah, because when we were talking about new names, the Guardians, okay, fine. But your guys' Curtis's theory is that any new team name that's introduced, the most recent example being the Cleveland Guardians, your theory is that any new team name that is introduced ever, no matter which league, sounds weird.
It's not a theory. It's a scientific fact.
It's not a scientific fact.
It's absolutely scientific.
Because I think that almost any animal team name doesn't sound weird at all.
Okay, what about this?
What about this
animal team name? How about this? The Akron Rubber Ducks.
Great. Fantastic.
I believe there's a rubber factory in Akron, Ohio, which
is
where
really?
They get the Rubber Ducks team nickname from.
That's impressive.
There's some really good ones in here. You guys need to keep sending these in because now I'm looking up all these team names. But let me get to the next story here. All right. You had Edmonton Oilers star. Didn't think I'd struggle with that pronunciation, Curtis. Leon Draisaitl had a very tense exchange with an Edmonton reporter. Now, this is the exchange itself. I'm going to play you this first.
What do you think is the number one reason for the losses now? Is there one thing that in your own mind you're saying we got to get better at that?
Yeah, we have to get better at everything.
Would you like to expand on that?
Nope. You can do that. You know everything.
Why are you so pissy, Leon? Why are you so pissy?
I'm not. I'm just answering your
question. Yeah, you are. Whenever I ask you a question.
I gave you an answer.
Not very good one.
Okay.
I have one more for you. Leon, you show your frustration on the ice last game against Ottawa. Is that a good thing when you show it so the other team knows you're frustrated?
Yeah, it's a great thing, for sure.
Good.
Yeah.
I can promise you with 100% certainty that whatever issue they have extends prior to that question.
Oh, 1,000%.
There is no way that he asks a player and then doesn't get the answer he wants and that they get like into this weird sparring match after that. No, that definitely precedes that question.
Correct. There's no doubt that that was something spilled over in front of everyone's eyes. But, you know, guess what? That is some serious you know what's on the reporter to continue to go after the player. And I don't know, Stacey, you're the reporter. You're the one that has the background in that. I know it's not necessarily something that you would do, but like,
absolutely not.
If the player is giving you
totally
an answer, it doesn't matter whether he's giving you a frustrated answer, a one word answer. You may be upset by that as a reporter, but like, you really feel like you should go and attack the player for what he's giving you in the moment?
I would never ask a player, why are you so angry? Like, I would not ask that question. And honestly, like, there are, it's like, I have no idea what kind of relationship they have, because sometimes players are pretty close with reporters. I think from the outside looking in, people imagine it as always an antagonistic relationship. And that's definitely not the case. Like, when I first started covering, there was plenty of reporters that, like, they've covered these guys. Now, this is only with football. They've covered these guys since they were 22. So when they go in and you see the same people, you know, day in and day out for months at a time, it's like, oh, how are the kids? And you know what I mean? Like, there are these pretty healthy professional relationships. Obviously, it's not like that for every player and every reporter. But I don't think it's always this antagonistic thing. So maybe they have a professional relationship that would allow him to do that. However, I don't think that that's professional, like that kind of response. And players, like, I don't know, there's this weird kind of thing where it's like a player isn't going to tell you everything that they think went wrong with a game, because sometimes either they don't want to or they're not supposed to or sometimes the answer is just like, yep, I messed up. Don't know what else you want me to say. I knew exactly what I should have done, what they did, and what I would do if I did it all over again, and I didn't do it. Like, I don't know how much more insight you need.
253 with a great point here. It says, clearly, Leon Draisaitl needs to leave Edmonton and sign with the Kraken. I think that would be a great move.
Good,
you know,
call,
I think Edmonton wants him out as much as possible.
I'm going to go ahead and start that report now.
Yeah.
And say that
the media has turned on him. Everyone's turned on him. It is it's a bad situation. We'll gladly take him here. I mean, you know, this could be the place for all the problem children. I mean, we'll gladly take him on.
Next
former
story.
MVP.
Yeah. We're gonna
be
start off
some talent.
You know who else I hear has huge issues, and then just list like all of them.
Connor McDavid. He's another one.
He's a problem. Man.
Another Edmonton player.
He's just someone they really need to get out of there. All right. One more story here. I've got time for one more really quick one. So we know that after that game, Dak Prescott, if you remember, he was initially really critical of fans throwing garbage and then changed his tune pretty quickly.
To know everything that we put into this day in and day out, try our hardest. Nobody comes in the game wanting or expecting to lose. And for people to react that way when you're supposed to be a supporter and be with us through thick and thin, that's tough.
I think they were aiming at the referees.
Yeah. They were at the referees.
Well, credit to them then.
The answer itself is funny, but I think a lot of people did take issue with that because they felt like, you know what, it's not the referee's fault that you guys lost. You kind of dug yourself into that hole. You had the play. They called the play. Like, yeah, it was a weird kind of bumbling, you know, final few seconds, and like it wasn't a great job by the refs, but they didn't lose you that game. Now, Dak Prescott, once again, kind of changing his tune, though. He's apologized since for his comments about those fans throwing trash at referees.
Well, also in the idea of, you know, encouraging basically assault against violence against referees, right? I mean, I think that was the biggest outcry that you ended up seeing in response to Dak Prescott's words. And, you know, you're 100% right, Stacey, that, you know, it drove me nuts on Monday, you know, listening to Dallas fans, listening to the reaction of Dak Prescott and all of that, where in the heat of the moment, you may feel and may put the blame on the refs, but that's the wrong place to be, you know, pointing to, because it's all on yourself. You were the ones that had 14 penalties that day. You were the one that went too far in your quarterback sneak and didn't hand the ball off to the referee, in which you should. I mean, there are a series of errors that were the fault of your own doing and not on the referees. And so, yeah, I mean, there's plenty to point to that, you know, it's just not right. And I think that's the right thing to do of Dak Prescott, to come out with a written apology, and say sorry for what he said about the referees.
Baseball America's top 100 prospects list has been released. We're going to have Shannon Dreher joining us at the top of the hour. Before then, though, we'll tell you where some of your favorite young Seattle players landed. You're going to be happy about it.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Baseball America has listed its 2022 top 100 prospects. Five Seattle Mariners listed here. Starting from the bottom up, you got Brandon Williamson, number 83. By the way, sidebar, we talked about him just last week with Brian Glazer, and it sounds like we're not talking about Brandon Williamson nearly as much as we should be. Matt Brash at 45, Noelvi Marte, still a couple years away, at 18, George Kirby, number 12, and number 2 overall in baseball, Julio Rodriguez. Listed there for the Seattle Mariners. By the way, a couple of these guys, Rodriguez and I would guess also Kirby, set to make their debuts this season. Mariners fans, I know there's a lockout. You should be very excited.
You should definitely be excited. There's no doubt about that. And when it comes to Julio Rodriguez, I mean, even though he's not number one, because clearly there's East Coast bias that's going on, and you know they're just knocking down, you know, the Seattle Mariners when they don't need to. I mean, it's just truly unfortunate. But all jokes aside, with Julio Rodriguez, this is a special talent. This is a guy that when you look at his numbers, what he was able to do and generate at the minor league level, those are the numbers that you see from not just really good players in this league, but superstars in this league and recent superstars that have come up into the ranks. And so it is very exciting about what Julio Rodriguez could potentially provide. And the question becomes, how soon do you see these guys? How soon do they become part of the mix? And, you know, we'll have Shannon Dreher on here coming up at the noon hour. You know, Shannon has always said, look, if you give Julio an opportunity to really, truly compete, like he has everything in him to go and win a job right out of the gate. And I'll be curious to see if Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais give him that opportunity.
Also not included here, I said Brian Glazer. We were talking about, obviously, my very real human boyfriend, Brian.
Oh, he was on the forefront of the mind.
He was on forefront of mine. Kyle Glazer, not Brian Glazer. So I'm already seeing questions about, like, where did Emerson Hancock go? What happened to him? Last year he was, what, 52, 57? Last year he was on this list. This year he's not. So Kyle Glazer, who was on with us, talked about some of that shoulder fatigue maybe playing a factor. He also mentioned, Brandon Gustafson also has all of this too, that evaluators might think that he'd be a better reliever. So I don't know. That story's still up on 710sports.com if you want to see all of Kyle's comments about not just Emerson Hancock, but he had glowing things to say about all of these guys, especially Julio. But that's, I think, why Kyle thinks you aren't seeing, or Kyle says you aren't seeing Emerson Hancock on here. But George Kirby on here, still got a couple arms on here with Brash, with Brandon Williamson. So still good news here. But when you're looking ahead to, you know, what Seattle should be excited about here and what you should be working toward, I think that there's plenty to be excited. It's not just this list. It's not just seeing it listed out. Take a listen to what Kyle had to say. So here's starting with what he had to say about Julio.
It's very, very rare to see someone this young with this much power who's as refined as a hitter as he is in terms of, again, just his ability to shorten his swing, make contact, make adjustments within at-bats, and ultimately drive the ball. Those are the guys who are the best players in baseball, the guys who are hitting 300 with 30 home runs, or in some cases even numbers even higher. He has a chance to be that level of a hitter. And oh, by the way, he moves really well for his size and plays a pretty darn good right field as well with a big arm.
Kyle Glazer thinks that Julio Rodriguez has every chance, should everything work out, nothing's guaranteed when it's a prospect, but has every chance to be not just like a great player for the Mariners. We're talking a superstar.
Yeah, and that's what's so exciting about what Julio can bring to the table. And again, it comes down to the question of when do you want to bring up Julio Rodriguez and when is the appropriate time? And arguably, it could be right now. Look, if the kid's ready, the kid is ready, and don't hold him back. But at the same time, you don't want to walk into a situation where you had with Jared Kelnick where you felt like the opportunity was right and everyone in that organization would stand by what they did in terms of bringing him up when he did. And even with the struggles that he went through, they're very convinced that, look, he wasn't going to fail in a dramatic way at the AAA level. Therefore, they needed to bring him up to the bigs, get him that exposure, get him that experience. And although it wasn't a perfect smooth ride, it was a ride where towards the end of the year, you started to see what Jared Kelnick and his talent can eventually do as he was working through some of those struggles and seeing the vast difference in major league pitching. So that to me is what it comes down to. And the other one that I'm going to be curious about is George Kirby. You mentioned Kirby, Stacey, as someone that you're probably going to see here get his first action. But I would have to imagine that Kirby's more of one of those guys that is going to get action towards the end of the season, not necessarily, you know, at the midway point or before the All-Star break. That would be my guess. I mean, do either one of you, you know, Stacey or Curtis, think differently on that?
Do you think you'll see Kirby after the All-Star break?
Yeah, that would be my guess if I had to assume when we were going to see him.
I think part of that depends on how the season goes.
Well, and I think it depends on how the rotation is performing at the early point in the season. I think there's no reason to believe that the Mariners' rotation, as it currently stands, will be anything less than good. I mean, you've got Robbie Ray at the top, Marco Gonzalez, Logan Gilbert, and Chris Flexen, and all four of those guys are capable of pitching a lot of innings and doing really well.
Devil's advocate, though. There are some fair questions to be said, like can Flexen repeat some of that success?
True.
Is Gilbert going to have any more learning curves?
Is Marco going to get off to another slow start
like he did
a year ago? But
Robbie
Marco
Ray, on second thought, is the only one I feel pretty confident.
Yeah, is Robbie Ray's tight pants going to be, you know, something that might hold him back?
That's
Who
my
knows?
Biggest question. You never know.
No way.
About
that's what makes Robbie
is he
Ray Robbie Ray.
Literally pass out on the mound. I don't know.
I sure hope.
That would be devastating.
Curtis, though,
but
what do you think
what?
About him making his
the
debut?
The tighter, the better.
Yeah, I think George Kirby definitely makes his debut in 2022. I think it could very well be before the All-Star break. I mean, as we've learned, you can never have enough starting pitching. Last year, the Mariners entered the season with six starting pitchers, and by the end of it, they were running out a four-man rotation in the final week of the season. So you can never have enough guys in your rotation. Who knows? Maybe they bring back Tyler Anderson, too. That would be something I'd be down for.
I would absolutely be down for that. Speaking of some of those arms, he's got some comments about Brandon Williamson. We'll get back to all of this. In fact, we'll start right there with Shannon Dreyer, and then we'll obviously get back to Julio. That's a big name all of you are talking about, of course, rightfully so. Shannon joins us in just a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere.